All right, welcome to Speak for Yourself. I'm Jason Whitlock. That's Marcellus Wiley, that dude.
Yes, sir.
Coming up, we'll tell you if last night took some of the shine off Sean McVay.
And if Julian Edelman just punched his ticket to Canton. But we start every day with a Whitlock. So what you got today, big dog?
That was amazing. Super Bowl 53. Amazing, not boring. Belichick, not boring. That game is how I will remember Bill Belichick, the greatest coach in the history of sports. Imagine a 38-year-old Muhammad Ali figuring out a way to beat Larry Holmes. That's what Belichick and the Patriots did last night, beating the Los Angeles Rams 13-3. Belichick's greatness was established long before last night's Super Bowl, but he elevated even higher last night. He added to his lore. He beat the kid who is the alleged heir to his throne. Imagine Jordan beating Kobe in the NBA Finals. Mm. That's what Belichick accomplished. And it wasn't close. Bill Belichick versus Sean McVay was a mismatch of historic proportions. The Doogie Howser of Madden video game football ran headfirst into the master of old school defense wins championships football. The Rams punted on their first eight possessions. The Rams did not run a single play inside the red zone. The high-flying, unstoppable Rams offense scored on a 54-yard field goal. That's it. Bill Belichick orchestrated a defensive masterpiece. He was Floyd Mayweather and MC Hammer wrapped under a hoodie. He couldn't be touched. Mm. Super Bowl 53 was not boring. It was brilliant. It was a reminder that football, more than any other sport, rewards the combatants who adhere to traditional values. The Rams were prepared in a microwave, expensive ingredients added over the offseason. Belichick has been baking his cake for 20 years. Wisdom and experience matter. The truth is, this game was a chess match between 66-year-old Belichick and 71-year-old Rams defensive coordinator Wade Phillips. Both defenses were masterful and physical. The game was super competitive. Intense, high-stakes competition is at the heart of America's passion for football. Casual fans and fantasy football players tune in for the offensive explosion. I just want to see great competition with minimal involvement from the referees, and that's exactly what I got. The bonus for me was the game served as a rebuke of McVay derangement syndrome, the belief that every NFL coach must look and coach like the Rams head coach. This offseason, McVay clone snapped up nearly all the head coaching vacancies around the league. But Belichick remains the NFL's past and future. It's an amazing story. 1 year after the oddest decision in Super Bowl history, never playing your year-long starter at corner, Malcolm Butler, when your defense is getting torched by the Eagles, Belichick unleashes the greatest defensive performance in Super Bowl history. Boring? No way. Unforgettable? Absolutely. All right, joining the desk now are Fox NFL analysts Mark Slareth and Greg Jennings. Marcellus, I'll start with you.
Yes.
That was an amazing game last night. I'm sure you agree.
I get it. We haven't been working together that long, so you don't know me that well. That was boring as hell. That was whack. That was anticlimactic. That was not what you want to send everyone into the offseason with in terms of taste of NFL great product. I tell you this as a former defender, please never put me outside the scope of being a defender and watching a defensive struggle. It's boring to the eyes. Eight straight possessions with a punt. There's no more of a boring play in football than the punt formation. Like, just seeing punt team, everybody like, oh. All right, I mean, half the time you see people's like, all right, bathroom break. Like, punt formation, nothing usually happens off of punt formation but change of field position. This game, I was expecting a lot. I understand, and I told you this on Friday. We're not going to rewind the tape to show you that. I told you McVay, as great as he is going to lose to his Miyagi. Danielson, take a swing too early thinking you learned all the moves. No, you didn't, because the old guard is still in charge in terms of Belichick and defense wins championships. I was bored. I'm not going to lie. I forced myself to stay in it because the Rams were still in it. It was 3-0 at half. It's 3-3. It's 10-3. All one possession games. But then I kept sitting there saying, this team is just inept. Like, and
Belichick did that. The Patriots defense did that.
Right. So there's a standard. Great football is when both teams are excelling and still there's one that prevails. Still good football is when one team is dominating the other team, but the other team is still showing you effort and achievement. What we saw there kind of was short in both, not only effort but in achievement. They were not able to show you any glimpse of the LA Rams of this entire season. Because of that, it just took something away from me. I just wasn't entertained.
I completely disagree, because I was, maybe it's not entertained, may not be the right word, fascinated was the right word for me. I was fascinated by the way you shut down this Rams offense. I was fascinated by the fact that the Rams offense absolutely did not unleash Todd Gurley. You know, one of the things that's amazing to me, having done three Rams games over the course of the season and talking to Sean McVay, he used the term, we like to give you the illusion of complexity, but we're pretty simple. We motion a lot of guys. We move formations. We go from, you know, tight end to the right to the left formation, you know, strong right, strong left, jet sweep stuff, ghost motion stuff. But at our core, we want to bludgeon you in the running game. We're a wide zone, cutback running team. That's what we do. You know, the Rams were what, 15-0 when they handed the ball to their running backs 20-plus times, and 0-4 when they didn't? On the season, and you mean to tell me that Todd Gurley gets 10 touches, 10 carries, and C.J. Anderson gets 7 in a 3-3 ball game in the fourth quarter? Like, I'm fascinated what you possibly could be thinking. And who's that coach that's dog cussing your head coach on the sideline going, what the hell are we doing? This is not who we are. Who's your get after the head coach when the head coach has lost his mind coach? You got to have, every team has one of those guys. In Denver, for me, it was Alex Gibbs who, I mean, I had to pull him off of Mike Shanahan a couple times when he wasn't calling enough runs, like he wants to fight him. Like, who's that guy? I was fascinated by the game plan. I was fascinated by the execution of the game plan. And I was thoroughly, I guess for lack of a better term, I was thoroughly entertained.
Well, I was not entertained at all. I was involved in what, in tune with what took place, because I'm a football player. I'm a football junkie. I know the game, so I can watch it from a different lens. But I look at things from a fan's perspective, the novice fan or a fan who just watches football versus a football fan. A football fan, yeah, they're going to stay tuned. They're going to stay involved. But someone who just watches football because it's Super Bowl Sunday, they're not entertained. Because they want to see touchdowns. They want to see antics. They want to see that climactic.
Greg. Don't speak for all those people.
I'm
for yourself.
I am speaking for myself.
You're speaking for me right now. Keep talking.
I'm speaking for myself as
so
well.
As a fan, you were not.
No,
that's great competition.
It was good competition. I don't think it was great competition because we didn't see both teams at their absolute best offensively.
What if somebody's preventing you from being at your best? Wade Phillips and Bill Belichick put on a master's class in defense. Jason, that's what that was.
Jason, look, you're talking to an offensive guy. And there is no way I feel like I can be at my absolute best, or we as an offense can be at our absolute best, and you eliminate everything we have to offer. You can take me away, but to take Gurley away, to take Robert Woods away, to take C.J. Anderson away, to eliminate Jared Goff, to even really minimize what Sean McVay has done all year. Like, I wasn't entertained by that. I wanted to see them do more, and I didn't get it.
Yeah, you know, I think that's just the wrong word, because like you're saying, it's the Floyd Mayweather argument of he gets in the phone booth with another fighter who's a professional at their best, but then he will just undermine everything that you do and take it away from you. Pacquiao, who will throw 200 punches around, gets in the fight with Floyd, and all of a sudden he only throws 20. And you're like, that's amazing. That's genius. But that's not entertaining, because look, you could be genius and still not entertaining. You can watch somebody do a physics test. It's genius. It's great. It's not entertaining. What we saw was a team that we thought was going to be able to keep pace for pace and get to the finish line and give us a photo finish and see what happens. And then you took that away, and now we're scratching our head instead of saying we were so thoroughly entertained. Why did that occur?
I guess, to me, Bill Belichick, other than an athlete, is the most compelling person in sports to me. His genius and what he's been able to accomplish over the last 20 years, other than an athlete, is the guy in sports.
The X Factor.
I'm with you there.
And so we just saw him put on his greatest performance. Agree. He took down a Los Angeles Rams team that had an offense that was a juggernaut. Somebody wrote some stupid piece a couple of weeks ago. The Rams have the greatest run-blocking offensive line in NFL history. And Bill's like, really? And so that, to me, was fascinating to see a genius at work when no one thought this. This is supposed to be the weak, vulnerable Patriots team, and they just put a clown suit on a kid that the whole league has celebrated like he's the greatest thing since sliced bread.
I think one of the other things that really interests me about this is we talk about the defense and what they were able to accomplish against a really good offensive line and a really good offense and basically shut them down through the entirety of the game. The other thing that amazes me is, you know, we hear the cliche defense wins championships, complete teams. I mean, There was a time when Allen, the punter for New England, was probably the MVP candidate. Here you have a team defensively, think about this, that shut down the Rams to 3 points, and nobody could figure out, should there be a defensive MVP? Should the MVP be on the defensive side? We can't even find the guy. So by default, because Edelman was great in that game, there's no question, but you give up 3 points to a juggernaut offense and you can't find a defensive MVP
Stephon
to win Super Bowl?
Gilmore should have been should, that
guy. But here's what's amazing to me. You're playing against, and this is what blows me away about Bill Belichick and the New England Patriots. You're playing, we talk about that offense. There's 7 first-rounders on that defense. Both corners are first-rounders. All 4 starting defensive linemen, first-rounders.
Talking about the Rams.
The Rams.
Yep.
And you got into 1970s football. Fullback, tailback, 2 tight ends, pro formation. You're like, listen, man, here's what we're going to do. We're going to run the ball. We're going to play old school, grinding out football. We're going to try to make our plays underneath to Edelman. That's what we're going to do. We're going to motion him in, get him a free release and a stack formation, make sure we run option routes. We're on the same page. That's going to be our guy right there. And you know what we're not going to let you do? We're not going to let you do what the Denver Broncos and Wade Phillips did to us in 2015 where they hit Tom Brady 24 times. I don't care if it's a 10-3 ball game, if it's a 3-3, if it's a 6-3 ball game. That's how we're going to win this game. And they went in there. They sold it to their players. Their players bought into it like they always did. And you know what? They're 6-time world champions.
Mm.
Good for them, man.
Hey,
that's awesome.
And look, Wade Phillips and Belichick, I mean, that was a chess match.
It was.
Wade Phillips went out there and said, y'all not beating us with your running game. You're not beating us with your screen game. I mean, the defensive ends were peeling on the screen game. I was like, oh, this is smart. And he said, you're not going to beat us with Gronk, like your deepest threat. But we got to give up something. You got to pick a poison. Edelman, do what you do. Edelman didn't score a touchdown again. He just kept the chains moving as Edelman does. But that was the way that they said, beat us. They dared Tom Brady and Edelman to beat him. Tom Brady, by his standards, mediocre game. Edelman had an amazing game, but still didn't change the points in the game. What really was the difference maker was those moments where the Rams hung around and they were still in the game in the second half and they didn't take advantage of those couple moments. You talked about it earlier. When you say, hey, there's a wide open Brandon Cooks for 6 seconds in the end zone, you got to hit him. Mm-hmm. Or when Brandon Cooks drops the ball or gets defended on. Those were the couple of moments that could have swung this
game. And again, and that's, I found it fascinating. Early on, one of my first comments watching the game live was like, oh, they got Jared Goff. He's got a little bit of happy feet. He looks confused. They've obviously confused him with coverages. These aren't the defenses he was expecting. Again, I just go back to Bill Belichick at 66, 20 years in, to me, has his greatest performance. It's the performance that I will never forget that will define him. He takes, here's Sean McVay in this high-flying offense. He's supposed to be what's next. Everybody's hiring a coach that looks just like him. And the 66-year-old man put a clown suit on him.
He did, but he didn't do anything special, but he did what was going to be effective. And what I mean by that, the same way they attacked the Kansas City Chiefs, it was very similar with what they did this game against Jared Goff, but the difference is Patrick Mahomes can extend plays. He's an off-script player at the quarterback position. Jared Goff, he thrives in the pocket. He has to step up and make those throws. That's where he's most effective. You flush him. We saw Jared Goff flustered. Mm. He didn't know where to go. He was feeling things that sometimes wasn't even there because the pressure was getting to him. in a young quarterback, if you can get to him like that early mentally, now on first and second down, third down, I'm thinking, shoot, if they get to me on first and second down, I know somebody's going to possibly be here on third down, so I got to hurry. And your time clock is sped up already, and that's what was beating the Los Angeles Rams all day because of Bill Belichick.
Yeah, I mean, look, a synopsis about, we're talking about Jared Goff. We're talking about what happened to the Rams offense, Sean McVay. One, what we just witnessed was a maturation process. We just witnessed growing pains. You know, the Jordan years against Detroit, like, you can see it's coming, but it's just not there yet. But it's coming. The Rams are coming. Sean McVay is still coming. But let's just be real about Jared Goff, and let's be real about Todd Gurley. They have shown us enough flashes of brilliance and flashes of inept play. Like, of late for Todd Gurley and his second year, even if you dive into the numbers of his first year, four of his first six games, 100-plus yards. Then it started to tail off, but he already had made a splash. Second year, we know that was bad under Jeff Fisher in L.A. Then he rebounded with the new coaching staff. Same thing with a quarterback in Jared Goff. First seven games, oh, my God, you're horrible. Like, these players right now are still in a conversation of how great are you, because we know that they're brilliant MVP considerations. But there have been enough flashes of this team. Chicago Bears game this year. Mm-hmm. Was that entertaining? I mean, the Bears went out there and smoked them, and we were like, where are the Rams and where's the offense? We all know missing Cooper Kupp has really handcuffed this offense. But that said, I won't go entertaining. I will go part of the building blocks of really understanding what greatness is, and Belichick still has a stranglehold on what that is.
Hey guys, this is Jason Whitlock with a quick word from one of our sponsors, SimpliSafe. No one should feel unsafe at home, period. Fear has no place in a place like home. That's been SimpliSafe's mission from day one. You may have seen their commercial about it during the big game this year. If you didn't, you can find it online. What makes SimpliSafe so great? SimpliSafe blankets your whole home with protection. Around-the-clock professional monitoring makes sure police are on the way when you need them. The security sensors are tiny, blending in with your home so you won't notice them. The Verge calls SimpliSafe the best home security, and it's a wire cutter top pick. As more than 3 million SimpliSafe customers already know, it feels good to fear less. So protect your home today. You'll get free shipping on any system order. Just visit SimpliSafe.com/speak. That's SimpliSafe, SimpliSafe.com/speak to protect your home and family today. SimpliSafe.com/speak. Now, back to the show.
All right, welcome back. Whitlock and Wiley, Greg Jennings and Mark Slareth are back. Time for a big story. Let's return to Atlanta, where the Rams' high-flying offense never took off last night, tying a Super Bowl record low with just 3 points. Boy wonder Sean McVay, who has been touted all season as the NFL's next great coaching genius, couldn't do anything against old man Belichick and admitted as much after the game.
I'm pretty numb right now, but, you know, definitely I got outcoached, and I didn't do nearly good enough for a football team. You know, I was not pleased at all with my feel for the flow of the game and kind of making some adjustments as the game unfolded and to giving ourselves a chance to have some success and put some points on the board. And, you know, credit to them, and they did a good job, and I certainly didn't do good enough for us.
All right, I'm not going to overreact to one bad game against Bill Belichick. He does it a lot to a lot of people.
Right.
However, a little shine does come off Sean McVay.
Shine is
shine. A little shine comes off Sean McVay, and I'm going to just tell you why. I think he failed at one of the just like the simplest things in the world. He had a quarterback that was playing in his first big game against the most experienced Super Bowl team in the history of Super Bowls and going up against Tom Brady and Bill Belichick. And he didn't do anything early with Todd Gurley in the passing game. Easy throws to get this kid some confidence. Didn't do it. It was a big mistake. His utilization of Gurley, I thought, was horrendous. Mm. And clearly he's acknowledging that Bill Belichick got the best of him.
I wouldn't take any shine off Sean McVay. We all know that you learn how to be successful at times through failure, you know. And the beauty of being a pro athlete, or athlete at any level, you don't have to be pro level, but pro level, you really hone in on this, is the ability to self-correct, So in the first quarter, I'm going into a game and I'm going against Orlando Pace. And I'm like, oh man, I got one move that nobody can stop. My dent move, my dent rip. Oh my God, if I hit him with my dent rip, it's a wrap. And then I hit Orlando Pace with my dent rip. It is Orlando Pace, so the dent rip doesn't work. And then you got to get into a self-correct mode. Okay, what part of that didn't work? It's not the move necessarily. Maybe it was the setup. Maybe it was the fact that I did it too early. Maybe it wasn't. It was a three-step drop, and I just did it too quick. You second quarter, third quarter, fourth quarter. Then I'm like, okay, now this is a perfect moment. Everything flashes. Everything comes together at once. Hit them. You may get that moment. I think this is a microcosm of what a career for Sean McVay will look like. He went up there. He got up there fast. In his second year, he's in the Super Bowl as a favorite to a lot of people. And maybe he just didn't know that moment fully like a double his age great in Coach Belichick. But don't give up on the play. Don't give up on the move. Don't give up on Sean McVay any regard. So no shine off of him. He got there faster than expected, and he will self-correct going forward.
Yeah, I look at him like I think a couple of different things. One, if you compete, there's going to come a time when you get whooped. And he got whooped last night. Mm-hmm. One of the things that shows the maturity of Sean McVay at 33 years old is owning it. You just sit up there and you own it. 100%. Yep, I got out-coached. I didn't do enough. And he's 100% right. You know, from not only starting, from a starting standpoint, but I'm also talking about adjustment standpoint. You're in a 3-3 ball game. Sometimes the best thing you can do is say, hey, let's scrap pile this pushing it down the football field thing, and let's get into a snot bubble fist fight. And at the end of the day, if we lose doing that, that's all right. But you didn't make that adjustment. I find his maturity, the thing about him, the maturity is great for 33 years old, but he's one of the most dynamic personalities in this league. Bar none. And him just owning that, jumping on the hand grenade, so to speak, will resonate with everybody that plays for him within that organization 100%. So, you know, he's a great coach. He got all the way to the Super Bowl. Somebody's got to lose. Somebody's got to win. He just went against the best coach in the history of the National Football League. There ain't no shame in getting whooped by the best.
Yeah, I take no shine off of Sean McVay. What I want people to understand is the regular season is – a season in and of itself, and he is a phenomenal regular season coach. The playoffs, every stage, wild card, division, championship game, they're different seasons within games. Then you get to the Super Bowl, and you have to be better than what you were in all of these different elements of the season, and he just was not. He was not, but owning it, falling on the sword, I can't take shine off of someone who recognizes I wasn't great. I didn't do enough to win. When you look at what they did against the Chicago Bears in week 14, very similar in this game. What was the first thing he did after that game? I didn't put my quarterback or my offense in position to win this game, to even make things happen so that we could be in position of late to win the ball game. The same thing happened. He got flat out outcoached. He said it. And you tell me another coach that will get up there after a Super Bowl loss and say, I got flat out outcoached.
I loved it. I loved that he owned it. However, having said that, look, man, it's just like what they say with a quarterback or any athlete the first time through. It's like, oh, okay. And then all of a sudden you go through that second lap through and people have a book on you. And it's like, oh, here's how we defense him. And they're starting to be, and again, I'm not overreacting. Sean McVay has shown himself to be a tremendous young football coach. But now there's starting to be a book. And I was reading the piece earlier this morning. This isn't the first time he came back in the second half with no adjustments.
Yeah.
That's starting to be the complaint about Sean McVay.
Yeah.
Halftime adjustments. Here you are in the Super Bowl with the longest halftime you'll ever have in any brand of football, and this dude didn't come with anything new.
You know what most of the time, and this will blow some people away, but most of the halftime adjustments we make as an offense are scrap piling things. This doesn't work, get it out. This doesn't work, we're not going back to it. This doesn't work, we're not going back to it. We're going to hang our hats on these three things.
Yep.
Most of it is not like, hey, we're going to change what we're doing. Most of it is like, hey, we're scrapping on all this garbage because that stuff don't work against, you know, walk up linebackers and the way they're playing. It's five across the board. That's usually, more often than not, what happens on the offensive side of the locker room in those meetings at halftime.
Yeah, let me take you in depth. Before I got with you with Locke, I used to do a little radio. And, you know, on radio, you got 4 hours. You got to talk about a lot of stuff. You said there's a book on Sean McVay.
Starting to be, yeah.
There's starting to be. There's a book on Sean McVay. There's a book on Jared Goff. And there's a book on Todd Gurley. Here's the book right here. First of all, don't ever take phone calls from Bill Belichick and text messages again going forward. You know, Belichick was like, boy, you think I'm giving you these compliments? They're coming for discovery. I'm learning about you. Here's the book. Minnesota game last year, the Rams lost 24-7. Remember that game? Everybody was like, that was a huge game for the Rams. And they lost that game with no second half adjustments. He came out and owned it just like he did this. I've heard this before from Sean McVay. If I have to start to nitpick against him. Jared Goff, first year, we all know, 0-7, didn't win a game. Played only one great game that year, even in a losing effort. Jared Goff has shown you at times you can box him in and he won't play himself out of those positions. Todd Gurley, first year. Remember this. This is rookie of the year, Todd Gurley. Four of his first five games, 100 yards. One out of his next eight games, 100 yards. People started to get the book on Todd Gurley. Second year, horrible. 76 yards was the most. Horrible. Third year, you get McVay, you start to roll, you start to become an MVP candidate. But that book is out there. And that when we start talking about, and we're going to have this conversation about Hall of Famers, people who could play themselves out of predicament, circumstances, whatever you dictate to me, I can self-correct and adjust and do something still great on that field. It's starting to show. Chicago game, Philadelphia game, New Orleans game, Todd Gurley, now against the Patriots. There's a way to slow down even the greats on the Rams offense. Sean McVay, the jockey's only as good as the horses. Sometimes his horses let him down.
Here's the thing about Sean McVay. It's an issue that I have, and I tell people this all the time. I'm a very slow thinker. It's like people, oh, you're smart. I was like, no. I just have a lot of time to think. I'm not married. I don't have kids. So it takes me 2 or 3 days to figure things out. I'm a slow. Some people, Bill Belichick to me has proven he can think on his feet as quick as anybody. He gets in that halftime locker room and does it. Some people take a whole week to prepare, and they prepare a great game plan.
Yeah.
But then once the game hits and you got to think on your feet.
You got to adjust it.
Yeah.
I will tell you this, talking to several coordinators over the course of the last couple of years calling games, when it came to Jared Goff, the one consensus was if he gets to the fifth step and just unleashes in his drop, no hitch, gets the ball out to the number one target, the read, and that guy's open, he'll eat you up. He'll take you apart. If you can get him off that, make him move his feet and adjust to the secondary guy, get through the progression, make him go to two or three, he becomes really fairly inaccurate. Yeah, and that was the book, talking to teams, and if you can do that, you can have success.
Let's return to the Super Bowl, where Julian Edelman was named MVP last night, putting up 10 catches for 141 yards in a game where both teams struggled to move the ball. It was yet another big postseason game for Edelman, whose prolific playoff history has sparked a conversation this week about whether or not the receiver is a Hall of Famer. All right, everyone here knows my position on this. He is a legitimate candidate for the Hall of Fame moving forward. I didn't call him a Hall of Famer. He's a candidate. I said this a couple of weeks ago. Other people, Deion.
See y'all
Sanders.
Later. All right, I'll holler at you.
Stop.
NFL wide receiver.
Go ahead. Look, he's a Hall of Fame candidate, man.
Man, haven't you learned your lesson in life? To stop joking about real stuff before them jokes become real. Message. Like, we need to stop this because it's starting to snowball and it's irritating. I'm not even going to go on that little pulpit and stance of I played the game and I know what a Hall of Famer looks like. I will say one of the criteria for a Hall of Famer is if there's any trepidation, any hesitation, any anxiety, any thought, any deep conversation about are you a Hall of Famer, guess what, you are not. A Hall of Famer. They are Don Dadas from name. As soon as you hear them, you know, we watch a game plan. We watch a scouting. We watch the All 22 video. No sound. It's dark in there, just the red dot on the screen. Most of the times when we're watching that, we're saying, hey, number 14, number 27, number 38. And then when you get to the Hall of Famers, you know what you say? Bruce Smith. He ain't no number. Like, when you see Edelman, like, man, look, in the greatness of scope, he has to be great in all moments. And I will use Tony Gonzalez as a Hall of Famer against Julian Edelman. Because Tony Gonzalez, in the postseason, not great numbers, in part because he wasn't there a lot, right?
Exactly.
But he is a Hall of Famer. You can't flip that and say, oh, well, you got great postseason, but you don't have great regular season, but you are Hall of Famer?
Way to skin a cat, man.
What you mean? First of all, skin it. I mean, Julian Edelman, 5 touchdowns in 9, what, playoff seasons? Not enough ammo, man. It's just that simple. Not a good conversation even to have.
No, Mark, you go. Go
okay,
ahead.
You got to get yourself. Go you got to get. I like when it comes to slot receivers. Okay, he can be a candidate. He can be a candidate right behind Wes Welker, right behind some of the other slot receivers.
Well, he's got more.
I was a candidate. I made the top 50. I got the top 50 list 3 times. I'm going to buy a ticket to get in the Hall of Fame. That's how it's going to work for me. And you know what? Ultimately, he's behind another 11 or 15 guys that are ahead of him before. You know, he'll even be considered a candidate. So you can talk about candidate, but, like, he's a great football player. Don't get me wrong, a great football player.
Great.
And that's pretty much where I'm going to end it.
He's a great football player, Mark. He is. He really is. I love everything that Julian Edelman does. He is not a candidate for Hall of Fame. He's not even in the conversation. You need to stop it and cut it out.
Jerry Rice agrees.
No, I don't care.
No, Jerry Rice agrees.
I don't care. I don't care. When you look at Hall of Famers, to your point, Mark, there is a no-brainer when you look at, is this guy? Absolutely. I don't need to see his numbers. Mm. I don't need you to tell me about his numbers. Mm. I don't need to say, well, what was he like in the playoffs? I don't need to try to credit him with other areas. When I look at Julian Edelman, has he been effective in the playoffs? Yes, but I need to see, well, let me see his numbers. Has he made a Pro Bowl? Exactly. He has not. My point, has he had...
Not his argument. His argument, it won't be based on Pro Bowl.
He's had 2,000-yard seasons. When you look at a list of guys who aren't in the Hall of Fame at receiver, and you talk about Julian Edelman being in the Hall of Fame because of what he's been able to do in the postseason because he's been in 18 playoff games, I had to do this, and I'm not a selfish guy. Mm. Marcellus, I had to do this. I had to look at my numbers and be like, you know, let me compare.
Candidacy.
And I was like, are you kidding me? He is nowhere close to my numbers, regular season. Ooh. And then my 10 playoff games to his 10, I got him.
Mm.
I got him.
The MVP of the Super Bowl?
He been there three more times than me.
Ooh.
Oh, but were you the MVP of the
Super Bowl? No, I wasn't. No. He was
the
MVP.
That counts.
He
that was, matters.
Give me 2 more opportunities at it.
Mm.
Give me 2 more opportunities.
Hit the drummer getting wicked. He up here talking that trash.
I hate to sound like I'm knocking a player.
Right. Malcolm Smith was the MVP of the Super Bowl.
Antonio Holmes was the MVP.
Is he going to Hall of Fame?
Antonio Holmes was the MVP of the Super Bowl. Is he
and let's not jump off that Pro Bowl conversation because no Pro Bowl era Hall of Famer has ever got inducted without 3 or more Pro Bowls.
Listen,
you got to be at least great in your year followed by your peers.
I get it. His argument will be completely different.
No, he has no argument.
Oh, so it's not Pro Bowl. It's not regular season. It's not numbers.
It's going to be about what he produced in the postseason. Was he a major factor in this Patriots dynasty? He's now got 3 Super Bowl titles on his resume. MVP of a Super Bowl. Other than Jerry Rice, no one's caught more postseason passes than Julian Edelman. He's got an argument that, look, as much as y'all don't like it, Deion Sanders, I listened to Nate Burleson and Boomer Esiason after the game. There are other football players, highly accomplished football players.
Better than me.
Who believe he has a legitimate candidate.
Where is your Twitter off? Because I'm going to spray Deion. I'm going to destroy Nate Burleson with this. Nate, calm down, Nate. He is not a Hall of Famer. Look, in an era of inflated numbers, you can't go the other way. You can't have deflated numbers, but then talk about, well, I am great because I have more opportunities in the postseason, and I showed up. All this respected to his career. He is an amazing player, better than I ever was, better than most. But Hall of Famer is not that. This ain't VIP. This is like ownership. This is like fewer than 300 people.
Can we just say this? He's 32 years old.
Uh-huh.
Just was a participant in his 3rd Super Bowl championship. I think he's played in 4, maybe 5. I can't remember. It's not over. Again, he might.
If he played baseball, it'll be over with the PEDs.
No, he might play in another.
But do you see what you're doing, Jason?
What? Like, what am I doing?
You're moving the criteria. You're shifting criteria for why he has to. You're saying, okay, this is his argument. This is why he could potentially be in. But everyone else, they have the same criteria.
They don't have the same finish. Greg, now I'm a part of the media. The media decides this right or wrong. Now maybe they should. But everybody doesn't go in with the same criteria. The arguments that people present a lot of times have to do with impact on the game. Because of Charles Haley, the 49ers, the Cowboys are able to do X, Y, and Z. The arguments are a lot more complicated than here's his numbers, here's his Pro Bowls, blah, blah, blah. Again, he will have a unique argument, and it's not over. All I'm saying is if this continues, another Super Bowl, more playoff receptions,
I get all that. But when the playing field is equal in the regular season, everybody gets to play those 16 games. Where is Julian Edelman? Has he been in Hawaii? Has he been down to Orlando? No.
What he's been doing is contributing to the greatest dynasty in the history of professional sports. And that's more important than guys that just put up numbers. Because, look, I'm watching guys that put up numbers that don't contribute to a winning environment.
James White going to be special if he keep doing this.
Where he's special to me is attitude. He sets a tempo. He sets an attitude for that team. That's great. Here's some of the candidates. Larry Fitzgerald, you can put him ahead of him. Ike Bruce, Steve Smith, Reggie Wayne, Andre Johnson, Anquan Boldin, Henry Ellard, Torrey Holt, Hines Ward, Calvin Johnson.
Other than Larry Fitzgerald, I could argue with a lot of those other guys. Other than Larry Fitzgerald, I can argue with a lot of those other guys. I don't think the gap.
I'm done. You know
are
what?
Those guys
I'm,
better
I'm
than
done, Jason. This is foolish. He's not better than Wes Welker for the Patriots.
How did you take this up with Deion and Jerry?
I will take it up with Deion and those guys.
I'm not alone here. Greg Jennings is back with us.
In my book.
My favorite segment, Antisocial.
My book.
Our social media manager, Darnell Smith, is here to help tell us what's popping on those Twitter streets.
What's crack? I like it. Yes, Wiener Snitzel. What's up, baby?
What's going on, Darnell?
Not too much, man.
That game was boring, huh? Admit it.
It was a good game.
Oh, here you go, baby Whitlock.
I'm a D-lineman, man. I appreciate good defense.
Oh, thank you.
Here you go. You weren't born as a
D-lineman. You was digging in them chicken wings. I know, right. That Buffalo chicken dip was fire.
Fire.
All right, man. Let's get it going with last night's halftime performance. It's been 15 years since the infamous Nipplegate, but people were talking about it last night when Maroon 5 from and Adam Levine put off his shirt at the end of the band's halftime show. Social media lit up instantly with comparisons to Janet Jackson's wardrobe malfunction, with some questioning why it was okay for Levine to perform shirtless while Jackson's exposed chest ignited a cultural firestorm.
Man.
Do y'all think this is a fair comparison?
No.
No.
No, I got a daughter and a son. Trust me. When we go to the pool, hey, baby girl, come here.
Cover that up.
Hey, boy, do you. You ain't even got to wear shorts if you don't want to, man. Go ahead. Yeah, keep it free. Like, man, our whole culture, look, I am not on board with everything being the same.
No.
Like, there are distinctions and differences. If we can't even keep this one alive, come on, man.
I don't even have to add to that because I got daughters and I got a son, and I'm the same way. Yeah. Babe, you need to tell her to put another long sleeve at the pool.
At the pool.
Sweater. Yeah.
Well, I ain't got no kids, and I hope this becomes the standard, that women can be like men and go shirtless if they want to.
You ain't right. I know where you're going. You ain't right. The Vegas Whitlock
think you slick.
Janet wants to do the halftime shirtless. I'm for it.
You know what?
Yeah.
You changed
my
mind. You know what? If that's how y'all want to roll, that's how we going to roll. Now, who doing the performance next year?
Right.
What's her name? Y'all are crazy, man.
All right, Darnell, what's next?
Stop, y'all.
Yeah, sticking with the Super Bowl. Whereas we all know companies bring their best to create commercials, memorable commercials every year, but this year most people were less than impressed, including our guy Whitlock, who tweeted this out. NFL 100 commercial was terrific. Commercials were bad because all companies live in fear of Twitterful outraged mobs, enemy of creativity, and risk taking. Y'all agree with Whitlock here?
The beginning, I agree that was the best commercial by far.
I don't know if that's the reason, because Hollywood, you tell me, Whit, Hollywood has lost its creativity. Everything's a remake. Everything's a reboot. Like, I swear, how do you get executives in a room and for 24/7, all you have to do is think of things and you can't think of new things? It's just amazing. So I don't know if everyone's running scared from Twitter, but certainly our culture is suffering from a lack of creativity.
I honestly agree with everything. I thought the NFL 100-year commercial was unbelievable.
Unreal.
I mean, I was watching it every time I got on Twitter feeds. But to the rest of it, I feel the same way. Everyone is kind of a little apprehensive on pulling the trigger because of everything that's going on in society. Everything's going to be nitpicked on social media, and how you present yourself and who you partner with is going to be analyzed.
But there was safe comedy growing up, and there's still safe comedy right now. There's still comedians who...
What comedy was safe?
Growing up, for real. Bill Cosby was safe growing up.
Oh, that's why I didn't pay attention. I was Richard Pryor, man.
Okay, look, I was Eddie Murphy and Richard Pryor, too. But I remember Bill Cosby was the PG version. I was like, okay, respect. And I don't know the comedians now. I'm out of that zone. But there's a safe way to be funny. Like, we're on this show, we say some jokes. I watch other shows, jokes.
It's not very safe.
We ain't safe, right?
We ain't safe.
No. That's the whole
you can't make a commercial off of what we do?
That's the whole point of me having me on the show. We ain't playing safe, bro.
All right. I didn't know that. Never mind. I didn't know that.
Knowledge.
Damn, knowledge.
All right, Darnell, what's next?
Yeah, moving on to a video that went viral during Super Bowl weekend. Cardi B rocked the stage the night before the game, and Patriots owner Robert Kraft decided he wanted to turn on with her, wearing his CDG hoodie and some Air Force Ones. Mm. Surprisingly, he actually had a little rhythm, hitting a move I like to call the billionaire bounce.
Hey.
Twitter was loving it, with one person even saying they knew the Pats would win after seeing this video. Look, I thought it was pretty cool seeing the owner have some fun. But you guys appreciate his money moves?
Hell yeah. Shout out to Columbia Lion, Bob Kraft. What you expect us to do? Billionaire bouncing up there. But what happened to the boycott, Cardi B? Or girl cop, my bad. In this culture, you gotta say girl cop, huh? What the hell was that? What happened to, I'm not doing anything for Kaepernick in the Super Bowl ad, but I'm gonna be up there with a Trump supporter bouncing at the Super Bowl, making crumbs off of the Super Bowl experience. I'm just wanted to put that out there for the culture.
Yeah, I have no problem with what Robert Kraft did. Look, you earn every moment, every opportunity you got is because of what he's been able to do. Do whatever you wanna do. I'm with you though, because everybody made it a point, I'm not performing, I'm not doing this. Yeah, not at the halftime. Right. But behind the scenes where nobody's gonna really know I'm here.
Right.
Yeah, I still take that check.
Everybody knew she was there. That's the point of this video, and that's the point of having Kraft out here. Look, this again why I say a lot of this stuff is just phony, man. It's all a charade. It's all done for Twitter. It's not real.
Pepsi commercial too, Cardi. What's up, mama? And she performed longer than Travis and Big Boy combined.
Right.
Lord, they was like, all right, coming in is Travis. Coming out is Big Boy.
Big Boy got one verse.
That was in a he's from Atlanta. Atlanta appearance. You got to get him
and throw right out. Speed that Cadillac up.
Darnell, what's next?
All right, moving on to the Saints.
The worst.
Who are still bitter about not playing in the Super Bowl. Fans decided to protest the game, throwing this huge block party instead.
Ooh.
Hundreds of people showed up, almost looking like Mardi Gras. Mm. The city acted like they weren't too concerned about the game, with the front page of this morning's New Orleans Times headline with, Super Bowl? What Super Bowl? Do you think New Orleans will ever get over this?
First of all, don't ever say that's hundreds of people again. Like 3 million people out there, you're talking about hundreds. That look crappy.
I don't know the exact number, man.
Will they ever get over it? Not until they win another one, and then they're gonna say, remember, we could have won another one. So, no, they'd never get over it. And they
shouldn't. Wish they would get over it because, and again, this whole thing, that's not a protest. That's Sunday night popping in the French Quarter. They had an excuse to go out and get drunk in the French Quarter pretend like they protesting the Super Bowl.
Don't do that.
That looks like a good time.
It ain't that cracking on Sunday night normally in the French Quarter. Not like that.
And again, that's them pretending they upset about the Super Bowl and making a bunch of money in the French Quarter. We throwing a big old party down here. Mm. I guarantee you there was beads and breasts all over the French Quarter.
They're not getting over
Adam Levine ain't over.
No time soon. Even if they win next year, they still won't get over it because to Marcella's point, they're going to complain about what could have, should have, and possibly could have been.
Right. Mm.
All right, time now for my new favorite segment of the antisocial segment. Darnell's question of the day.
Okay, I'm
going to take it away.
Let me hear this.
Take it away, Darnell.
That's my guy.
We got to get one more in. Did you get one more in?
They ain't get one more in yet.
Yeah.
Looking like little Aaron Donald there on that last
year.
Little Aaron Donald.
They used to call me that back in my prom. Boy.
Not on the field, though, huh?
You ain't that young. Aaron Donald was in high school.
I've been to some injuries.
Back in my day.
I've been to some
Donald
injuries
with
Locke.
I was
saying, y'all the same age.
Aaron Donald like that Donnell. Anyways, y'all, all right. So, look, all three of you guys have been successful throughout your careers, and a lot of us, we know people or heard of stories of people who've been successful but don't know how to handle it. You know, I know people who's changed up once they've reached a certain level of success. So my question for you all is, how do you guys maintain or how do you guys stay level-headed throughout this level of success?
I've got an answer. People need time to think. One of the main things I do is, whether I like it or not, I force the people close to me to be critical of me, and to make sure that I keep an environment around me, from my mother to my boys from college to whomever I'm dating or whatever, tell me the real, hurt my feelings. I insist on that. Don't tell me what I want to hear. That's my main source of level-headedness. I ask the people close to me, keep me in check.
Yeah, I borrow from you that same mindset. I always tell all my friends, please be brutally honest, and anyone who's around me, I will do an assessment every week or two a month, and I'm like, have they criticized me lately? And if they haven't, then I start putting them on notice, like maybe they're not really the homie. But this whole change and level-headed, two different worlds. You have to change once you get paid, once you become, please change. Don't act like you're the same, because everything around you has changed. Go with it. Now, those changes don't have to be negative. They don't have to be bad, but certainly different security measures in terms of who's your circle, what you're up to, how you spend your time, your focus. Everything has to change. I hate when we have to have this resistance and anxiety about change. You're supposed to change when you're promoted to a new level and status in this world. Just don't have to use it for a negative.
For me, it's simple. I keep what's important, what's most important. That's my faith and my family, period. And so for me, I know, I understand this could be gone tomorrow. Fox could decide, you know what, Greg, you've been great, but we're going to move on. And I have to move on. I have to look for another avenue of where I'm going to achieve success. That's what keeps me level-headed. I stay on the grind.
Like Green Bay did, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I've been cut a couple times. All right, I'm going to keep balling.
Got to keep going.
I got to keep going.
This ain't the end of me. You're going to see me again.
Minnesota.
Gotcha. Right. Appreciate you.
All right, welcome back with Locke and Wiley. We're joined now by longtime NBA player Ketino Mobley. Let's move to the NBA, where the Lakers lost to Golden State on Saturday, playing yet another game without LeBron James. LeBron sat out, citing concerns about load management.
Ew.
With Luke Walton explaining that James woke up sore after playing 40 minutes in his return from injury against the Clippers on Thursday.
Why that voice?
Because load management is all about doing whatever is necessary for the Pelicans to unload Anthony Davis to the Los Angeles Lakers. And if LeBron has to sit out games in order to get Magic to give up everything, including Jenny Buss, that's what he's going to do. That's why there are now stories out there, Anthony Davis, he'll sign in Milwaukee, he'll sign with the Clippers, the Knicks.
Yeah.
Rich Paul and them are creating a hysteria and putting pressure on Magic, everything but the kitchen sink. As long as LeBron and AD are here, everybody else can go.
I do respect that theory, and it's interesting. You can see that Rich Paul, AD are reloading, certainly trying to get the ammunition going because the trade deadline's Thursday, so they need to make sure that this happens with a sense of urgency. But I respect. I'm going to separate that from LeBron and him waking up saying, I'm sore. I played 40 minutes against the Clippers. I don't want to play against Golden State. One, I am sore physically, but two, the Lakers, if everything works out for the Lakers, are going to be an 8 seed, maybe higher, but probably an 8 seed in that world.
They'll be higher than that.
Well, okay.
They're 3 games out of 6th place.
Yeah. Right? Somewhere in that world. But here's the thing. They had an amazing win over Golden State last seen with LeBron.
Mm-hmm.
Do you really want to damage what that looks like in terms of whatever you have on this team going forward if you may have to see the best team in basketball? Again, there's something that you can freeze about that confidence you got against Golden State and not touch that in a compromised effort if you're LeBron coming off of a 40-minute game against the Clippers. So I think it's twofold. One, I am sore, and two, why go out there, hobble around, we get smoked by them, and then we kind of lose what we built up.
Well, another thing, too, is we're all competitive. So when you're coming back, LeBron played about – he's 16 years NBA, and if you count playoffs and you count the Olympics, what is he, 20 years total?
Yeah.
That's a lot on his body. So when you come back, I don't care who you are, when you come back from certain injuries and then you have to go full throttle, your body is sore. Now, I'm not giving an excuse.
What's today's day? February 4th?
Yeah. Yeah.
February 4th. Yeah. More than halfway through the NBA season. Who's not sore, Coutinho?
No.
Are there players in the NBA that aren't sore?
I didn't say that. That's not what I'm talking about.
What?
LeBron James is different.
But did they miss 5 weeks and come back at the age of 34 after all that wearing?
The adductor, the groin, those are something serious.
Yeah. Tom Brady's 41 years old.
He is 41.
Is he taking days off? I'm sore. Load management. Let me take a day off.
Can he got to play once a week?
Yeah. You got a week off.
You got to play once a week.
He plays football.
Okay.
Basketball, they've illegalized all contact. You can't foul it. Karl Malone couldn't even play in this league. Well, ain't nobody getting touched.
You can't touch
there.
Tom Brady no more. So we're not going to. Tom Brady's my guy. We're not going to do this.
Yeah.
LeBron
load
James.
Load management.
Load management.
In your day, it was tendonitis. I remember them 80s and 90s. Everybody had tendonitis. Your knee don't hurt.
A little sore knee.
Your knee don't sore knee. General soreness. Move.
I'm listening. Michael Jordan, go look at probasketballreference.com.
Okay.
And see how many times Michael Jordan played 80-plus games in his career. Michael Jordan took on the responsibility of showing up and playing game after game after game after game after game and putting on a performance and carrying the lead. So last year was the first time LeBron ever played 82.
He averaged, 78?
Michael Jordan
did it.
Michael Jordan played 82. Yeah, dude. Load management. That's a load of crap.
But you got to preserve him a little bit, don't you think?
He just came back and played one game, and it's Golden State, and it's the Saturday Night Showcase game.
LeBron doesn't play.
They're trying to force Magic and Pelinka to give up the entire franchise. He could have been out there playing. Y'all know this.
Okay, so him sitting is forcing him to do
that?
Yes,
he's in a fight with Magic and them. Give up everybody. I want Anthony Davis. That's why Anthony Davis is out there. Well, I'll play for the big three. If they put enough money on the table,
put him on our team.
They're trying to force Magic to. And again, maybe I don't blame him. But again, let's don't sit here. Oh, he's sore. He needed a day off after sitting out for more than a month. And to me, the last week or 10 days, he didn't need to sit out. He was just doing it because they're putting pressure on Magic.
You have all this anger for all the Spurs during their dynastic 20 years and all the load management that they use with different
words.
What's
that? The guy just missed 6 weeks, Marcellus.
Yeah, and that's exactly when you're going to be sore. After a six-week hiatus, you come back from a growing tear.
That is true.
That is exactly when you're sore.
That is true.
Your body's like, what is this?
You're about to play Golden State. So your energy level.
Yep.
Maybe Golden State, that's the time you want to compete, the best to come.
And you're going to tweak it again, trying to do too much.
Yeah.
You calm down, LeBron. We already know you're a monster.
Is there anything LeBron could do that could be criticized?
Oh, yeah.
Could someone please tell me what it is he could do?
You said if he's beefing with Magic, I thought you thought him and Magic were on the same page, but now you're saying
No, I have not.
No?
That's never been my
you think he's beefing with Magic about it?
Yeah, I think he wants. There's nobody on that roster that LeBron James doesn't think could be traded for Anthony Davis. That's what I think LeBron believes.
Well, I mean, it's Anthony Davis, right? It's not no D-list.
Magic doesn't believe that. Magic wants. He doesn't want to give up everything. I don't think Pelinka, Jenny Butt, they just don't want to scrap everything for Anthony Davis. But that's what they're about to do because LeBron and Rich Paul are forcing them to. Draft picks and everything else. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar's bones will be thrown into this trade at some point.
You don't think anybody from the organization is on board with LeBron in terms of, everybody can go. They've already showed their colors, all these young players.
They reported what the first offer was.
Well, it's a first offer.
Clearly, it's always a first offer.
You have to offer something, right?
Yeah, it's low. And you don't start high, you start low, correct?
So you blaming LeBron for taking a little?
I'm not blaming LeBron. I'm just being real about what LeBron is doing.
Is there anything LeBron can do that Jason Whitlock will support?
Absolutely. What is it? I might even support this move here. Mm. But I just want to talk about what this move here is.
I'm sore.
I'm sore.
Yeah, I don't support that. Tino Mobley and Mark Schlereth are back with us. Let's return to Atlanta, where Tom Brady won his sixth Super Bowl last night, passing Charles Haymon for the most ever by a single player. With the win, Brady not only cemented his legacy as the most accomplished player in NFL history, but also tied the number of titles by the GOAT from another sport, Michael Jordan. Both of these guys obviously had incredible careers, but Jordan never lost in the finals and was MVP in every championship he won. The question is, who's had a better career, Tom Brady or Michael Jordan? Marcellus, I'm going to let you go first.
I will start this by quoting one of my bestest friends in this game, Max Kellerman. He does boxing.
Yeah.
So Max always, at the end of a round, we used to have a lot of disputes. I'm like, he won. No, he won. And then finally he says something that really just crystallized how you should judge anything in terms of comparison. Who won that round? Who's had the better career of these two? Who would you rather be? And I used to sit there, and that crystallized how to grade a round and how to grade a career. Who would I rather be? Michael Jordan, in terms of everything he's accomplished in the game, or Tom Brady? It's not really that close, is it? I know. It's Michael Jordan. Michael Jordan, everything he put on the court in terms of greatness, and we talk about his perfection in the finals, but also just being considered the best at the position when the argument ceased, whereas Tom Brady got to that place finally, and then the arguments have certainly been minimized, if not ceased. We're splitting hairs. We're A-plus to A-plus-plus, but for me, it's Michael Jordan. Individual, team, extracting that to the global environment. Like, Michael Jordan, just bigger for his game, bigger in his game. And I'll go back to high school, when it was always the star football player and then the star basketball player who ran the campus. It wasn't even close. The basketball players ran that thing every single time.
Depends on what school you went to.
Oh, my school, every school I've seen.
Listen, I respect what you're saying, but I think a lot of us get caught up in preconceived notions in life, okay? So if you're from New York and your father's a Yankees fan, typically you're going to be a Yankees fan. When you're growing up in an era where Michael Jordan dominated in every facet, athletically, in everything he did, commercials, Nike, this, that, whatever it was, right? Come fly with me. We wanted to become Michael. So it's kind of hard for individuals such as myself, yourself, to say, you know what? Tom Brady, no. I like Michael. Of course you're going to say that. Now, Michael was 6-0, but we forget, are we going on rings? Because if we're going on rings, then Bill Russell has 11. So I'm not, I love Michael. I grew up Michael. But I'd rather be Tom Brady than Michael Jordan. 19 years, or 18, 19 years, 9 Super Bowls. I'm a quarterback. Like, I'd rather be a quarterback.
Then a point guard of a dynamic.
He's not a point guard. He was a two guard.
Two shoot
guard. And Tom Brady's the ultimate team guy.
Man,
I'm 100% with you. I'm on Tom Brady, and I think there's a couple of different things. And Michael Jordan obviously was unbelievable, but if I get LeBron James, I can completely change the future of my franchise. I go from the outhouse to the penthouse with one guy. Football is the ultimate team sport. And during their last collective bargaining agreement, what they tried to do is they used a Robin Hood kind of philosophical approach to football, meaning we're going to rob from the rich and give to the poor. We want this window of this opportunity, this window to close after a very short time. So when you win a championship, and I've been a part of three of them, when you win a championship in the free agency era, guess what happens? Everybody flies around your players like seagulls at the dump and starts picking them off and taking them to their team, and it weakens your team. So the fact that the one constant has been Belichick and Brady 20 years now, two decades of excellence, two decades, nine Super Bowls, the 17 seasons with which he played, because the 18th season he was out after week two, 13 times to the AFC Championship game, nine times to the Super Bowl. We will never see a run like this. So I think it's Tom Brady.
I think it's a coin flip that, because I'm a football guy and I think football is the harder sport to play and dominate, and because I think quarterback is the position in sports, I would go with Brady. And I think you all's argument about, we're talking about 20 years basically of dominance.
Yes.
From start to finish. No knock against Michael Jordan, but he had to learn how to be a winner early in his career.
His first 4 years. I mean, he was getting handed to him.
Yeah, he had to learn.
Well, that's unfair because Tom Brady, even in his first championship and even watching yesterday's championship, was supported. I don't want to say handed to him, but certainly while he's learning to play great, they were giving him championships.
Let me ask you guys a quick question.
Got to go quick.
Okay.
We got Mark.
Was Michael Jordan a great athlete?
Beyond.
Is Tom Brady?
No.
No, he's doing this without the athleticism and the gifts that were.
You gotta take that argument upstairs.
Uncle Jimmy's here to help us talk about our approval ratings for Patriots head coach Bill Belichick.
Great.
Uncle Jimmy, you keeping it real today, huh? You
brother.
Supporting Cardi B.
Supporting Cardi B.
What? Cardi B, Cardi A, Cardi C. Nice. I'm really trying to still just manifest the fact that you told me my shoes look like them Bally shoes that OJ left.
Oh, hey,
I ain't even happy about
this. Manifest. We ain't letting that fly. We like the show.
Thank you. All right. Here's a highlight from our discussion earlier about Bill Belichick. Man. That was amazing. Super Bowl 53. Amazing, not boring. Belichick, not boring. That game is how I will remember Bill Belichick, the greatest coach in the history of sports.
Great football is when both teams are excelling and still there's one that prevails. What we saw there kind of was short in both, not only effort but in achievement. They were not able to show you any glimpse of the LA Rams of this entire season. Because of that, it just took something away from me. I just wasn't entertained.
That was an amazing game last night. Uncle Jimmy, what's your take?
You know I didn't watch that mess, man. Don't even sit up and ask me about that, man. Let me say this. It was three amazing NBA games on yesterday.
Hold on. You didn't watch the Super Bowl? Like, the Super Bowl?
No. I had an NBA watch party at my house.
Did you wear that?
We watched NBA games and discussed the social injustices going on in the world as we know it today.
What'd you say? Stop lying. What NBA games wrong?
Lakers and Golden State.
No, that was Saturday night. You lying?
Look, I T-bowed it. I watched it on Sunday.
T-bowed.
I recorded it and watched it on Sunday.
DVR.
I watched that on Sunday instead of that foolishness of a football game that y'all watched on Sunday. Yeah. Hell, I already knew what was going to happen. The moment you hopped your hawks on the Rams bandwagon,
hawks,
they had no chance of winning. And I told you last week,
Jinx.
Check his neck for a wire, didn't I? Didn't I tell you that? Now, you part of the conspiracy. You part of the problem.
What conspiracy? What conspiracy? What was the conspiracy? Why would there be a conspiracy? Roger Goodell don't even like
exactly what they want.
Roger Goodell don't even like Tom Brady.
The Patriots dynasty. The Patriots. Hello? Think, nephew. Think. Patriots. It's right there in your face. Gladys Knight sang the national anthem. Who took a knee at halftime? Nobody. Who got MVP? Julian Edelman. Todd Gurley barely touched the ball. Could it be any more obvious than the gravy that's in your veins?
I'm this is vibe. Hey man, go to Aggie Mall, man.
That was a good one. Beef sweat.
That was great. What is so obvious? It's over my head. What's obvious?
I don't get it.
Are you really? Are you that stupid? Boy, I swear, and I done told my sister, boy, but if you wasn't my sister's child, the only team that will visit the White House won.
Oh.
Duh.
Oh.
This has been your Black History moment.
Hey. Hey. No?
No.
Yeah?
No.
A little bit.
Let me go to my
let's do some work.
Approval ratings.
That was interesting.
Because Marcellus, I got something for you.
Listen.
You don't believe in 110%, but we got it here today.
What you get?
We got it here today. Bill Belichick, 110%. Job performance at 30. Wow. All-time greatness at 30. Character and authenticity, I keep it 25 for 110%. Mm. I owe the man an apology.
Yeah.
I spent all football season bad-mouthing him, complaining about him, predicting his downfall. I have to make up for that.
Mm.
100, the highest approval rating. He's better than GOAT status.
He's better than
Belichick.
GOAT.
This is called Belichick status.
Ooh,
now.
What animal
110%.
Is that? So five rings is not 110%, but six is, huh? That's how you get
it. I got to make up for it. I made a fool out of myself. It took all of my strength this weekend, though. I did not bet on the Rams. I wanted too bad.
Ooh,
but sorry. I remembered that feeling from 2 weeks ago, and I said, never again.
Never again. Look, I mean, on the field, on the sidelines, of course, he's perfect. I thought that meant 25 and 25, but new rules. But he's still got them gates. He's still got them issues. He's still got some conspiracy talks around his facilities and organizations.
None
so all
of that matters it. Today.
No. I'm not taking anything away from those guys. But it is still a GOAT, but not perfect. And we know Belichick could be better in terms of showing his personality and also still being the coaching genius that he is. Respect to him, though. Congrats. Another championship.
Mm.
Now, let's get back to that conspiracy. That was